It's just beautiful, just the open space.
It's glorious.
One of the nicest places in the world.
We're lucky with how much sandy beach that we've got, and it's just a nice, like, relaxing place, the sound of the waves.
We went to the Caribbean in January, and you think it's just the same.
Bournemouth, a picturesque seaside town on England's south coast.
It's this gorgeous stretch of beach.
7 miles of golden sands. I consider it's one of the best beaches in the world. Love it.
It's the shot that the weather forecasters, whenever they're telling you it's going to be a really brilliant bank holiday weekend, they show Bournemouth seafront.
So unique, so special.
Show me somewhere better is my standpoint.
Bournemouth is regularly crowned Britain's favourite coastal resort and best beach. Every year, the town welcomes 11 million visitors who enjoy its long stretch of golden sands and largely unspoilt coastline. I say largely unspoilt.
It was horrendous.
Ugly.
Disappointing.
Atrocious.
You see, there was this building.
It was a big glass box.
It just stuck out like a sore thumb.
A very unpopular building.
It was a monstrosity of glass and steel.
Too big, too high, too everything. It was just wasn't needed.
So unpopular, it united the entire nation in hostility.
Quite possibly one of the ugliest buildings I've ever seen on a
seafront. It was voted one of Britain's most hated buildings.
This was the Waterfront Building, more commonly known as Bournemouth's IMAX Cinema.
How could anybody build such a hideous building in such a place?
It's grey, it's very, very big, and it's repulsive.
Waste of time.
I think they just got it wrong.
Please, help.
What we got left is just ruined.
Yeah, rubbish.
To get in the mindset of local people and understand why they hated this building so much, we need to go back in time a little. Bournemouth was one of many towns created during the British seaside boom of the 18th century, when spending time at the seaside became fashionable with the upper and middle classes. By the middle of the century, Bournemouth had a thriving set of beachside attractions, including a pier, public swimming baths, and a small collection of shops. And it's here, at this epicentre of the seafront, where all roads lead and where so many tourists congregate, that the IMAX was eventually built.
It's so lovely that it's been erased from my mind, really.
That's Liz Gordon, who's co-writing a book called Bournemouth in 50 Buildings, out in September.
It's not the best buildings in Bournemouth. It's about the buildings that tell the story best. We did include the IMAX in the introduction because no story about Bournemouth would be complete without talking about the IMAX. It was a huge thing at the time.
I asked Liz if she could remember what stood by the pier before the IMAX came along.
It was the pier approach swimming bars, which was a very popular place with my generation.
The site had been used for swimming baths since 1838, but the building Liz remembers was built in 1937.
Certainly on a Saturday morning, we would all pile into pier approach and do our swimming lessons. Particularly if the weather was grim and you couldn't go on the beach and couldn't hang around there. I do remember as a child going to see the aqua show, which would be a bit like sort of a synchronised swimming show, and they had divers. There was one particular chap who I think he was an Olympic medal winner, and he did diving, and it was kind of his swimming show, and that was always really great fun. That was a really good night out.
But in 1984, the baths closed. A large conference venue called the Bournemouth International Centre had opened nearby, and inside it was a modern public swimming pool, complete with spirally flume, making the old swimming baths obsolete. They were demolished, and the empty site was used as a car park for 10 years while people thought about what to do with it. The overwhelming feeling was that it should be another family-orientated indoor facility, and there was something in particular the town had been clamouring for a long time.
Welcome to the IMAX Theatre. Here, you don't just see movies, you are part of them.
An IMAX 3D cinema had been talked about for the site since the 1980s, and no world-class tourist destination would be without one. After a few false starts, In March 1997, the developer, Sheridan, submitted plans for the site to the council. These consisted of a tall, deep building faced with tinted glass. The sides would mainly be flat, and towards the rear, the glass would give way to concrete blocks and long swathes of grey steel. The roof would be shaped like cascading waves to represent the nearby sea, and inside, the ceilings would undulate in a similar fashion. At the front, there'd be a glass atrium as tall as the building, containing the lift shaft. At street level, you'd find a steakhouse on the left and a nightclub on the right. A separate entrance on the beach side of the building would lead to a fast food place, coffee shop, and the cinema itself, with its 419 seats and 19-meter-high screen. That's taller than four double-decker buses, if you're into that kind of thing. On the other side, facing the town gardens, would be a Chinese restaurant. In the middle, a children's play area, and at the top, a traditional English pub with a terrace looking out to sea. In theory, the waterfront building would have everything to keep Bournemouth's residents and tourists entertained all year round. The plans were approved.
I don't remember a lot of... It must have gone out to public consultation, but I don't remember there being a lot of controversy when the plans went in to have it done. The controversy started once it was being built and people saw how big the building was going to be. And the fact that it was blocking the view as you came down Bath Hill.
Yes, over the course of the planning process, the building had grown by 17 feet. It would now stand at 62 feet high, that's 19 metres. And the appearance of the building wasn't particularly popular with local residents either.
When you had such a beautiful viewpoint, why would you stick this horrendous building in the middle of it, especially since given that the other buildings around, like the Royal Bath Hotel and the other hotels on the front, had a much more traditional feel in keeping with the area.
It was just a brick and glass. I mean, if you say brick and glass, it should conjure up something nice in your mind, but it didn't. It was just a big, too big, too high, too everything. It was just wasn't needed.
What's incredible is that there were only two public objections to the plans. Some people were concerned that the building didn't appear as light and glassy as it did in the original sketches, but nobody mentioned the increase in height. This was the most prominent construction project on the most desirable plot of land in town. How is that possible?
The involvement of the public is a very difficult thing to get right.
That's Councillor Simon Bull, Chair of Bournemouth's Planning Committee. And just to be clear, he wasn't in office when the IMAX was built.
I think we've all got a lot of things going on in our lives. We all tend to be busy people and planning's not, doesn't excite everybody.
Speak for yourself, Councillor.
And there's a general feeling that it is looked at, is reviewed by the council, and they will make appropriate choices. They're not going to put something ridiculous, one hopes, in places, you know. So there's a degree of trust in the councillors, which is as it should be. Councillors are elected by the local population, and that is their job. I'd like public to be more involved. It's occasionally I get people saying, well, I didn't even know that application had been given permission, and it's right near my home. And of course, if people don't read the notices on lampposts or don't go into the website, they're not going to know what's happening.
But what about something as big as the IMAX, which is going to affect the whole town, not just the people living right beside it?
Of course, there was a lot of interest after the event. As you say, there was only two objections, I think you said, which surprises me for such a large development. But again, if it wasn't picked up, if the press didn't run a story on it, generally people don't always hear about these things.
Probably true. What is undisputable is that the local authority was under immense pressure to provide an indoor leisure facility in this prime site, which had lain empty for years, and so the scale of the building seemed to be overlooked. But could there have been a more sinister side to the building's gestation?
There was a lot of tales of people taking backhanders, and you know, and I think still to this day, if you asked any of the locals, they would say that, you know, that that somehow somebody managed to get that through by fair means or foul to get council approval to build it. There were lots of tales, but then there always are. Whenever anything that the public don't like goes through, they always say, "Oh, somebody's taken a bun." Who knows?
In September 1999, the waterfront building opened, but its main attraction, the IMAX cinema, didn't. The nightclub became popular with students, stag and hen parties, and the pub provided them with nourishment for their hangovers the morning after. But technical and funding issues meant no 3D cinema. Owners of the other businesses in the building complained about the lack of footfall, so much so that the council considered finding another use for the cinema part of the building. It even sacked the developers before reinstalling them a few months later. A sense of frustration grew among local residents. They said the building was affecting tourism and that its large backside needed covering up with trees or something. But eventually, 2.5 years after the rest of the building, the cinema opened in March 2002. It still wasn't free of problems. The 3D screen failed on the second day. There were also complaints of 38 degree temperatures in the glass atrium. And financially, the cinema didn't do very well. IMAX films are expensive to buy, and they didn't change them very often, showing some of the same films for years on end. They were also expensive to go and see. Films like Ski to the Max, starring pop singer Pink and some stunt skiers doing crazy things up mountains, was just 42 minutes long, but a ticket cost more than a regular cinema ticket. In 2003, the cinema laid off staff and began opening just 3 days a week off-season. Then, 2 years later, it closed, apparently for refurbishment, but it never reopened. And to make matters even worse, that same year, it achieved an unwanted architectural accolade.
Earlier this year, Channel 4 asked you to vote for the building you most wanted to see razed to the ground.
And guess which building won? Actually, it was Cumbernauld Shopping Centre in Scotland. But in second place, first in England, was Bournemouth's IMAX. A pretty impressive feat for a building just 6 years old at the time. In a programme called Demolition, Channel 4 sent Janet Street Porter to Bournemouth to investigate.
Well, I'm dropping down into Bournemouth now. Quite a lot of traditional seaside architecture. And ahead of me is quite possibly one of the ugliest buildings I've ever seen on a seafront.
That view from behind was definitely not its best angle.
Do you know what? It looks like a cross between the back of a supermarket, the back of a warehouse, or possibly an aircraft hangar. It's grey, it's very, very big, and it's repulsive.
While in Bournemouth, Janet managed to catch up with the former leader of the council, which, under his jurisdiction, granted planning permission for the IMAX. He explained how it felt at the time to get the scheme approved.
We were elated and really pleased, and no doubts at all. If we were at fault, when they came to build it and the back end went up particularly, one looked at it and said, that's not good news.
So it seems like even he didn't realise what it would look like. Now notorious, thanks to a national TV programme, rumours started to fly around about what was going to be done with the building. There were proposals to screen non-IMAX films, family favourites like The Sound of Music and Greece, but this wasn't allowed by the legal agreement signed when the building was built. Someone suggested lowering the roof and converting the cinema into a swimming pool. Oh, the irony. But the problem was, the IMAX wasn't owned by the council. It was owned by a local government pension fund from Northern Ireland, and the legal agreements for running the building were between the fund and the developers. So the council and people of Bournemouth were completely powerless to do anything. In time, the remaining businesses in the building began to close, not helped by the financial crisis of 2008. In 2010, the council negotiated a £7.5 million deal to buy the building back. This decision wasn't totally free of controversy.
people felt that there were lots of other things locally that the money should have been going to. And the streets weren't being cleaned and the potholes weren't being filled. People just didn't like the fact that the money was going to that when it should have gone to other things.
And the people of Bournemouth hated the building so much, during the town's Arts by the Sea Festival in 2012, they staged a light show depicting it being demolished to huge cheers. The real Wrecking Balls came in February 2013.
Just over a decade ago, they were putting it up. Today, they began pulling it down. A small crowd gathered to see the beginning of the end of the IMAX.
I can remember driving down Bath Hill, from the top of Bath Hill down towards Pier Approach as it was being taken down, and I really felt quite emotional. It felt like something really huge had happened, that view had been, been restored. And I know that sounds a bit emotional, and it's only a view, if you like, but it's such a powerful image of Bournemouth. And I think it was also the circumstances behind it, because of the controversy over the building. It felt really good that everything had sort of gone back to normal. I suppose one good legacy from the IMAX has been the fact that the cinema seats are now in a very beautiful theatre in Boscombe called the Shelley Theatre. So they haven't gone to waste. They're being used for a good purpose.
Unbelievably, by the time the IMAX was finally demolished, people have been calling for it to come down for over a decade.
The history of the IMAX is a really interesting case study in how a building got demolished on the strength of public opinion, but the building got approval without any strength of public opinion either way. It's a strange thing.
This is Richard Eastham, an urban designer and planner whose practice, Ferrier Urbanism, was commissioned by Bournemouth Council to prepare a report looking at what could be done with the IMAX site once the building was demolished. I asked Richard what he thought went wrong with the IMAX.
I think it was a strange thing, really, because the council and the community in Bournemouth generally seemed to have a wish for an all-weather, indoor leisure destination. There was a constant refrain from people that when you have a bad summer, the beach is out of action. People want to go somewhere indoors, to a family-friendly indoor venue. So the IMAX was built really along those lines, that it was down at the seafront, but it was an escape from bad weather. But I think the IMAX cinema is quite limited. There aren't a huge number of blockbusters that come out in that format. So it never had perhaps the wide appeal that a standard cinema would have. And then the building itself had a sort of very temporary feel to it. It appeared very cheap. The materials were quite cheap. It was essentially a big grey box without any sort of active edges around it. There was a corner that had a bar and a cafe or something, I seem to remember. But it sort of sat like quite a bulky square-framed box down at the seafront. And it did block a view that you had coming down past the Royal Bath Hotel, but I never quite bought into the argument that its main problem was it blocked a view of the sea, because you get views of the sea from all over Bournemouth, and it was one particular quite limited view of the sea that the IMAX stood in the way of. I think it was a combination of factors, that the building had a sort of cheap appearance in terms of its materials and its finish and its detail. What was going on inside the building was quite limited in its appeal. And then it also occupied a very prominent position. I'm not sure the view is the issue. I think it's the prominence of it, right at the entrance to the beach. And when you put all those factors together, I think people really took against it.
I went on to ask Richard whether he thought that the IMAX was simply ahead of its time.
I think it was the reverse. I think it was behind the curve, really. I think that at the time it was built, around that point, people are really starting to explore the benefits of well-designed public spaces in the profession, as it were, landscape architecture, urban design, and so on. You know, public squares, public spaces were really starting to reveal their economic, social, and environmental value. And lots of big cities like Manchester and Liverpool were really putting a lot of time and effort and resource into creating really positive public spaces and squares and streets that would draw the community together, provide a platform for theatre and performance and festivals. And it was clear that the glue that holds towns together is the spaces between the buildings. And what happened here at IMAX was that they went back to a model, it's like the indoor shopping centre model, where the leisure was inside a box. The box was placed in the town without any sort of awareness of its surroundings. And I think that it was a very inward-looking building of a model maybe 1980s, 1990s shopping centres took. But that their time had been and gone.
So the IMAX may have been behind the times, but most people complained about its size. While I was chatting with Richard, he mentioned something which could have potentially avoided this problem, or at least warned people before it was too late.
What's just struck me, though, as an idea for the IMAX, if someone had said, OK, you're going to put a building there, can you put an inflatable structure or just some sort of temporary, you know, like a crane with a bar on it to show us where the roof will be, actually physically on site. You could put, just imagine a giant bouncy castle of the size of the IMAX. If you put that in place and said, what do you think of that? People would be appalled. I know in France, they do put buildings on site, temporary structures of the scale and position, so people can get a proper understanding of whether views would be obscured and so on. But for major projects, I know in Paris they did it for the Grand Arch at La Défense.
I put the idea to Councillor Bull, the chair of Bournemouth's planning committee, who we heard from earlier.
I've never heard of that idea. I can see the merit in it in giving some people an understanding of what it is, you know, what the scale and the size of it. Of course, even that doesn't really work because you're not going to get the lighting, you're not going to get the windows, you're not going to quite get how it sits. But yeah, I mean, accurate scale models can be done, and I've seen those many a time where they show how it sits around the local area, around the buildings nearby.
Well, it was just an idea, but it goes to show the challenges facing the planning system when it comes to involving the public.
There's research at the moment from University of Manchester about the public's involvement in the planning process. It was the 50th anniversary in 2019 of the Skeffington Report, which is about involvement of the public in the planning process. And in 1969, this report was written. It could have been written yesterday, really, because the same issues plagued the planning system about public involvement. And one of the things that this current research has revealed is that the statutory parts of the planning process where the public are asked to get involved, such as commenting on a planning application, are terribly weak at effectively explaining to people what's likely to happen and getting them to get involved in sharing their views. The idea that a set of very technical drawings are submitted and for 6 to 8 weeks they're on a website and you're meant to comment on them. And if the comments aren't overwhelmingly hostile, then it gets the nod for a planning permission. I think, you know, the system needs rethinking.
For all its faults, and it's perhaps no surprise that the vast majority of comments I've received from people have been negative, there were some good memories of the IMAX as well.
The dancers in the nightclub would get up on the bar every hour and do something like Out of Coyote Ugly, the film. And then the pub at the top, Harbour Lights, was just a really cool place to hang out because, again, you had such a fabulous view from up and top. So the pub itself wasn't anything special, but it was just a nice place to hang out. And it was, really a hub of where to do lots of things. So if you were going to have a birthday party, you'd have it there. If you wanted to meet with your friend for a coffee, you'd go there. I used to go and meet my dad lots and hang out and have a drink with him. So for me, it was a real shame when they closed it down because of losing that bit. I was happy that the building got shut, but it was that bit was a shame because I had nice memories from there.
I heard from another resident, Paul.
I'm Bournemouth born and bred to 5 generations. I love the town and I fancy myself as a bit of a local historian.
I asked Paul why he thought the IMAX was so unpopular.
I mean, I spoke to people about this in the past, and they had no other reason for not liking the IMAX building apart from the fact it blocked the view. And if you said to them, well, you can walk to the top of the cliff and still enjoy the view, it's still there, they couldn't hold on to that thought, and they couldn't accept it as a valid argument. Why was it unpopular with people? I think there were lots of people who just jumped on the bandwagon.
Do you not think it was ugly in any way?
Sorry?
Do you not think it was ugly in any way?
Ugly? No, not really. When you come down to ugly, ugly is a value judgment, isn't it? And it depends a great deal on your values, on what you consider is beautiful and what you consider is ugly. I like the wave-shaped roof. I thought the roof was interesting. I think the roof had architectural quality and it tried to make the building more attractive. Its faces of the building were quite plain and were of glass to reflect the outside views. I like that idea. And the wave on the roof gave it a bit more style. So, yeah, I liked quite a bit about the building, actually.
Paul, I salute you. You saw positives in the building where no one else could. And in making this programme, I've become quite fond of it too, in a strange way. Or maybe I just feel sorry for it. Yes, it didn't fit in. It was too big. The buildings inside didn't do very well. But it represented an effort on behalf of the town to offer something new, something impressive. It's just a shame the result of this effort was so out of tune with what the people wanted. Anyway, with the IMAX no more, there was the small matter of finding something to replace it with. Here's Richard again.
So I think if you are to put a building back in that space, the occupant of that building, the activity that goes on inside of it and around the edges of it, needs to appeal to lots of age groups and be a very public, welcoming, positive experience. But then the building itself, the actual design of it, can start to reflect that. And there's some good examples at the moment that are being used. The Opera House in Oslo, in Norway, it's a civic use, it's an arts building, but the way the building has been designed on the outside, it's got sort of ramps and seating areas where people, even people who aren't going into the building, but people passing by can sort of sit on the edges and enjoy it as a civic building. And I think there are lessons there for how you design a building that occupies a very prominent position. It doesn't tell people to stay away. The building, the language of the architecture encourages people to come close and enjoy it.
Remarkably, such was the public pressure to tear the building down, it was demolished with no plan in place for the site afterwards. It was back to square one.
You know, the council just wanted it gone in response to the public's dislike of it. And I think there's a political, small p political tactic there. You know, the council wanted to be seen to be acting on the public's wishes that the building was really awful and people didn't like it. But more often, a demolition happens because something else is on its way. And the values and the economics of the new building help pay for the demolition of the old. But in this case, it was a demolition with no replacement in mind. So the space that emerged would be there for some time, maybe forever, if there's no desire to replace a building on that site.
Richard told me about his ideas for the site.
Well, the brief we had was, once the building goes, how could the space be finished in a temporary manner? So sort of a low cost finish to sort of make good the site. And then, given you've got a sort of clean space, what sort of activities could be promoted? The town wasn't sort of crying out for more public space. It had quite a lot. One of the motivations behind the report that we were asked to write is, you know, what do we do with an additional one that we wouldn't have, you know, we wouldn't have commissioned another public space necessarily, but we've now got this demolition resulting in one. How can it add to the mix? So the first thing we looked at was the level change. It's a sort of cut site. The land rises up either side. And it was clear that if the building comes out, you could have a sort of dead end. So one of the first things we suggested is that you have a stairway access from the back to allow people to enter the site from both ends. And that would allow sort of a level change experience. People could climb up the stairs and go to the higher eastern end of the site and look down into the space. Also, the idea of viewing terrace around the outside, looking down into it. What was quite interesting about it is that it wasn't just a flat square where people would stand around the edges. The level changes created a sort of amphitheater effect. So the idea of a stairwell and a, not just detailing the space inside, but the edges of it on the higher ground was important. So we suggested how that might work. And then we also talked about how you could, rather than have any permanent fixtures inside, maybe temporary spaces, and how you could use maybe for sports event, cultural events, pop-up theatre, those sorts of functions down at the seafront on a regular basis. A third aspect was how the space could be used by community groups, not for sort of big corporate expensive things like cinema or trade shows, but to showcase local talent. And one thing we suggested was how the council might do all the paperwork, do all the red tape for a public event, but then community groups from the suburbs of Bournemouth, Poole and Christchurch that wouldn't normally have an event in the town centre could book the space for very little, you know, or maybe no fee at all, and hold their dance event. Could be youth group, youth theatre, could even be like a gardening, horticultural show that they might hold out in Christchurch, but they bring it into the town centre. So the idea of promoting the IMAX site for local community groups might sort of bring back a sense of civic pride or a sort of an affection for it after the eyesore of the IMAX had gone. It's almost like a gesture back to the public.
The reality is, after operating as an event space for a few years, it's now in temporary use as an adventure golf course while they decide what to do with it long term. Slight sense of deja vu here.
Yes, and I think its location as a sort of an events headquarters, as it were, for, you know, the Bournemouth Marathon, the 10K run that you get down the seafront. I know that you used to go into that space to pick up your T-shirt and medal and that sort of stuff. And I think the first aid tent was in there. So it has proved a useful meeting spot or headquarters spot for seafront events. But it would appear they just weren't frequent enough to keep it ticking over like that.
So, what do people think about the space now?
I don't know whether they need another golf course because there's one in the gardens. But, you know, anything that people use and enjoy is a good thing, whether I agree with it or not. It's quite a nice social space in the summer when all the fountains are going and stuff.
I did go to a conference there where they put up like a portable building. And it was fabulous. I think that area now is a lot better. It's got a cafe. It's kind of got that cafe culture with people sitting outside. And it's almost like a natural progression to walk through the gardens and then go to one of the cafes. And it feels much more open and family friendly. And just more of a space for people than it was before.
It sounds a bit obvious, but could it be that the secret to designing community spaces is to engage with the community?
Yeah, I think we do a lot of work where we involve the community in the design process so that they're telling us how a space, why it doesn't work, what they'd like to see, how it does work, and we can explain to them how that might happen. So it's a very collaborative approach. And then if you do take that approach, by the time the final design is sort of being prepared, the community recognise their ideas, they recognise why it's that way, and they become very committed to it, and they become a sort of champion for the scheme. It's not been imposed upon them. I think the community groups have an enormous amount of local knowledge to share. And if designers work with them and listen to them, I think some of the mistakes the IMAX project as a whole fell into can be avoided.
Bournemouth's IMAX saga teaches us a lot about how not to design a building, especially one in such a prominent location. What it has also taught us is that people care deeply about their public spaces, and this is perhaps no more relevant than right now. The current virus pandemic has forced us to reconsider our activities outside of our homes. It's also forced us to reconsider our sense of community.
It's not clear which way things are going to go. There's a sort of dystopian view that public spaces will become much more hostile to crowds and gathering, and people will feel more intimidated about mixing in a crowded situation because of a virus that may not be known about. And the authorities have got powers now to disperse crowds that they didn't have before. So that's the sort of the bleak view of the future. A sort of more optimistic angle, which I much prefer to think about, is the idea that after the lockdown and after these restrictions are lifted, that people are going to really appreciate the human contact and the social gatherings that made life special beforehand, and treasure them even more. So the idea of festivals and music events and arts events that happen in public spaces become even more special to the sort of human experience of towns and cities. So if we can use the next, you know, the latter half of this year to put on public events that celebrate the fact we can be back together in public space, then I think there's a very positive future.
I would love to think that after the pandemic, we would develop some kind of street culture where we do all enjoy sitting outside in cafes and eating and being sociable. But I think that would be changing a complete mindset in this country. We're also very weather dependent, so I don't think we can. However, it would be lovely to think that people would want to do that, to be more sociable, be more respectful, and just enjoy being alive, really. And what a beautiful place in the country to be able to do it.
Wish You Weren't Here was written, produced and presented by me, Lou Bradley. Original music, also by me. Special thanks go to Richard Eastham of Ferrier Urbanism, Liz Gordon, whose book Bournemouth in 50 Buildings comes out in September, hopefully, and Jess, Colin, Jenny, Paul and Simon for their interviews. We'll be right back.